Chapter 4. Mars, Pavonis Mons. Two masked, metal-skinned Skitarii marched Eldon Urquidex's awkward frame down the long, smearily lit corridor. The clump of their stride rattled the loose metallic floor and swished the hems of their robes. The tough, energy-damping weave of their garments did odd things to the incident light, darkening their deep crimson hue to just a shade above black. These were Alphas, veterans drawn from the numberless battle maniples of Mars and augmented according to that status. The best. The transorganic soldiers' long march brought them to a door, airlock solid, guarded by another fearsomely augmeticized warrior build in dark robes and wielding a brass-plated heavy rifle that bristled with deadly technologies. An arc rifle. Perfect for the close-range, narrow-quarters combat that a probability engine might envisage for the labyrinthine laboratorium subplex of Pavonis Mons. The best. The dim red glow of the guard's visored sight washed over Urquidex. Sour air, 5 parts per million perspiration, 500 parts engine grease, rasped in and out of his Cognis filters. The guard brought around his rifle in a nightingale murmur of high-tech servos and synthetics. At that range, with that weapon, with these cortico-sensory enhancements, aim was unnecessary. They weren't going to kill him. Easier to have done it in any one of 100 different places before now. The 3-hour cage descent into the post-industrial hive of Pavonis Crater. The skim pad, dust-blown and radiation-scoured, nothing beneath it for miles but stratified piping and still radioactive sludge. Aboard the dust skimmer, laser-etched with a signum of the 1014 Noctis Maniple that had swept him over the ancient rust sands and light harvesters of the Martian desert. Or even right there in his plug station in the Noctis Labyrinth where they had come for him. Who would have tried to stop them or cared if he had been summarily executed even as he ordered his files? The locum trajectory? His fellow adepts? As well to expect an impassioned defense from the tech servitors. They weren't going to kill him. The assassin, Yendel, must have been unmasked, and now Van Auken wanted to interrogate her accomplice in person. That was the only explanation that made sense. Urquidex forced his dry mouth to swallow. His thoughts were of nerve endings and pain receptors. Trillions of microscopic sensors, thousands of kilometers of insulated wiring, all evolutionarily perfected by the goal of rendering the hominids of his direct antecedents sufficiently risk-averse to perpetuate Eldon Urquidex. But now, no further. The guard bared his metal palm to the judgment of the reader by the door. There was a clunk, a ripple through the creaking substructure, then a gasp of air as the doors cracked ajar and then shunted apart. His escorts let him through. They were not unkind. Force was mass, velocity, and an exponent. Kindness did not factor. The chamber on the other side of the door was a short octagonal cylinder, like an expressionistic version of an antique 8-shots firing cylinder portrayed through geometry. The ceiling and main walls were a ridged metal, some kind of supplementary ventilation system running along the recesses. The floor was the same loose, rattling metal slats as it had been outside. The angled slants joining the horizontals to the verticals were of a browning armour glass.
"Stop here,"
grated the Skitarius to his right. He stopped there. The two Skitarii backed away through the door. The guard simultaneously lowered his own weapon and punched the control panel to bring the doors to a shuddering close. Urquidex stared at the solid plasteel for a moment, feeling an utterly illogical sense of panic on watching the two Skitarii leave, as if they had been not colluders in his captivity, but protectors, the only thing standing between him and death. He shivered, the tensile fibres bonding his digitools directly into his nervous system, causing them to twitch accordingly. Unsure what else to do, he swallowed and shuffled around to face the opposite door. There was a clank, as if he had triggered something with his movement, and an intense ultraviolet light flooded in through the armour glass. He grunted in pain. His instinct was to turn away, and he did so, optics down, but the light was coming from everywhere. It was purple, piercing, retina-burning, but at the same time, little more than bleed-through, an augur ghost at the edge of his perceptual range. The effect was at once vivid and watery. Biologist adepts designated the treatment as soft decontamination. Degrade any biological contaminant while leaving precious technologies intact and without chemical residual. Erquidex retracted his telescopic eye stalks and dialed their sensitive optics shut, burying his face in the folds of his robes for good measure. He could feel his exposed flesh begin to heat. This biological contaminant did not consider the procedure nearly as soft as it once had. At the same time, he became aware of an urgent hiss. Some kind of gas was being delivered into the chamber through the secondary ventilation system. His heart rate spiked, a fight-or-flight reflex that perversely then delivered the command for his lungs to draw deep. Ozone, he realized, sensing the epithelial sting on the lining of his nose. Erquidex felt his UV-reddened skin begin to burn. The lights shut down abruptly. The hiss stopped. Cautiously, Erquidex re-extended his eyes. He could still smell ozone, a sore throat tightness down the back of his mouth. "Proceed, Magos." The voice was female, piped into the chamber like gas through walls. A clunk sounded from the far end of the cubicle, followed by a whoosh of evacuating air. Erquidex winced as it flowed over his sunburned flesh and the door ground open. His ears popped under the change in pressure. A biologist's laboratorium, then. The design adhered to schemata laid down by Archmagi from an era before the Dark Age of Technology, and to Erquidex was more familiar than his own surgically modified face. A slender needle of curiosity pricked his skin of fear. Such a place was an unlikely venue for an interrogation, or even an execution. He walked through the door to be met by another Skitarius. This one was female, that much of her original body plan evident even through her heavy robes and obtrusive techno-refinements, and was covering the door with an arc pistol. Her left hand had been retrofitted with a combat glove with an integrated transonic razor. Erquidex absorbed those prosaic details at a glance, for her most unique feature was too stunning to devote time and attention elsewhere. Head to toe, the Skitarius had been physically remodeled in dazzling silver. Other agencies of the Imperium exploited that precious metal for its anti-psychic properties, but the Adeptus Biologus archives retained many fragmentary references to its ancient bactericidal application. She watched him skeptically, and Erquidex fearfully said nothing. "Stand down to readiness level Zeta-1 Prime," came the voice of Artisan Trajectory Van Auken, each word enunciated with a puff of mechanical diaphragms. Eldon stiffened and froze. The Artisan Trajectory emerged from the incense pall that cloaked a bank of shuddering ruminators. His spindly shoulders were slumped under the weight of a servo harness and multi-tools, and his forehead had been broadened and deepened with the installation of a thick plasteel plate. He emitted a hiss of pistoned air and dismissed his sterile and glittering adjutant with a flex of a mechadendrite. "You have no questions, Magos? Do you forget the 11th Universal Law?" Erquidex answered by rote. "The universe is uncertain until it is observed. Your locum trajectory expressed concerns regarding your state of mind. It was her conclusion that you were distracted, that the grand experiment was in some way insufficiently fulfilling." Erquidex opened his mouth, but there was no subjective rebuttal to the locum trajectory's objective conclusions. He remained silent, mouth dry. Van Auken knew. The thought ran round and round his higher functions like a scrap code algorithm on a recursive loop. "You are frustrated by the lack of progress," Van Auken continued for him. I understand. It is not your proper specialism. You have been unable to devote your full energies to this grand task.
Yes, artisan, he said carefully, but my lapse of purpose is inexcusable.
Indeed so, but the Fabricator General has another task more meritorious of your talents, Magos. The artisan trajectory turned, and for the first time, Erquidex took a proper look at the glorious scale of the laboratorium. Instruments filled the floor, spaced apart from one another, as machines of their type were known to be jealous of their status within a schemata, and could be cantankerous when the proper attention was not afforded them. Adepts of the first level chanted soothing psalms, scattering the straining machines with crystals from their aspersoria. Carbon dioxide produced and sanctified in the manufactories of Markotis Temple. Even so, electrical smoke seeped from the instruments' backs and pooled on the metal tiles. Wheezing scrubbers did their best to filter the pollutants from the air. Servitors clumped from instrument to instrument, carrying plastic plates indented with tiny wells containing organic serum. Attendant techno-magi received the sample dishes, commended them to the all-seeing attentions of the Omnisire, and fed them into the machines under their care. And through the semi-transparent plastic viewplates that overlooked the sterilization chamber, the exact repetitive routine was enacted over and over. Identically laid out levels, stacked one atop the next, high into the smog layer.
"Samples are brought to this laboratorium from across the Imperium," said Van Auken. "You can understand the demand for secrecy and for biological integrity."
Erquidex nodded. A Magos was loading a set of plates into the ornately inscribed chrome housing of a prognosticator, triggering seizures of clacking and shuddering and frenzied bursts of laser light. In parallel, hundreds of sequence graphics sputtered up on the networked displays. Each was an assemblage of coloured lines representing A's and T's, C's and G's, and X's. After about half an hour of chewing noises, the machine expelled the spent samples and emitted an insatiable peal for more data.
"You hope to find a solution to the grand experiment in their genetic code," said Erquidex. It won't work. Veridi Giganticus's genome is structurally unstable. It is a mosaic of recombinatorial sequences and mobilizable elements, continually on the cusp of one speciation event or another. Veridi Giganticus should not be at all."
"It is your specialism, Magos, not mine, and I do not pretend to understand it. But no, that is not our goal."
With his human hand, Van Auken directed Erquidex's attention to a neighbouring screen. This one was packed with moving code lines, the backing cogitator plugged via a heavy-duty shunt into a run of cabling that disappeared into the ceiling. The system's program wafer had the machine data mining the Martian noosphere, pulling up astropathic logs, engagement reports, every bit of data relevant to the Veridi Giganticus samples that came with a grid stamp and a time stamp, and then cross-referencing them against the sequence output. A map. The artisan trajectory was making a map. The very genetic instability of Veridi Giganticus was the way in. A population would be expected to accumulate sequence alterations over a very short period of time. As they moved on and established new populations, those unique alterations would be carried forward and added to, and so on. With enough samples, those changes could be tracked back. The Adeptus biologists did it all the time, mapping the spread of viruses through hive worlds, extrapolating the evolution of newly discovered Homo subspecies at the request of the Inquisition. Thus was the grace of the Omnisire made manifest in the base material of its organic machines. Erquidex could see sample tags referenced to Adamantua, Undine, Malleus Mundi. Hundreds, thousands of names, worlds from the breadth and span of the Imperium. The Orc incursion was more widespread even than he had realized.
"You are looking for the Orc's homeworld."
"One successful test does not complete the grand experiment. Phobos has a diameter of 22 kilometers. Mars is more than 310 times larger. In effect, the grand experiment has become an issue of scale.
Scale?
Erquidex tested the word, measured it, weighed it. The grand experiment had not stalled because of him or Yendel. It was a technical problem. Yendel was probably still alive, going over his last communique and wondering what had become of him. He swallowed, his sudden relief somehow more powerful even than his fear had been, and clasped his hands behind his back to obscure his quivering digitools.
Veridi Giganticus has somehow managed to overcome the discontinuity between efficiency and scale, said Van Auken, or otherwise devised a solution to circumvent the Omnisire's constants.
It sounds as though you admire them for it.
They are a superbly constructed species, individually adaptive, collectively diverse. They are an apex species, Magos, as once we were. There is much to relearn from them, and yes, we are not above admiration. We have narrowed their point of origin to 6 or 7 candidate sectors, a few thousand systems at the galactic core of Ultima Segmentum.
Erquidex's mind spun out a stream of hurried calculations. Stars came fast and close in the core, and a few thousand systems need not, comparatively at least, cover a lot of space. A search of it would still be a massive logistical undertaking, but compared to the galaxy as a whole...
Has the Imperium been informed?
The Fabricator General will apprise them if and when the timing is opportune. The Imperium is more than Terra, Magos, and humanity is more than the Imperium. We must learn how Veridi Giganticus operate their technology. You were there, on Adamantua. The 11th Universal Law applies. You have observed Veridi Giganticus. They are not unknown to you.
Eldon nodded mutely, numbly. The instruments before him continued to gorge on the galaxy of data they were being fed. Too much to smuggle to Terra, far too much. He had to find the world. One world, one word. That he could get to Yendel and to Terra.